Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson himself. Pete, how are you doing on this fine day?
I'm good. I am in the situation where I'm moving house. I'm moving out of Soho, so I'm currently covered in boxes, and I just want it all to be done. So I hope everyone's having a lovely time on this Wednesday, the 5th of whatever month it is, August.
I'm sad you're leaving Soho. As I said, I think last week, I'm sad that we're no longer going to have tales of woe or excitement. Of course, you living in central London has always had some interesting stories along the way. Now you're moving now you're moving somewhere that isn't central London. We're going to miss out on all that action. So are you sad to move?
Exactly.
How do you feel?
No, not really. But I think I've done 6 years now. I think it's probably time for me to ship out, so to speak, and find a new place to live. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting moving. I'm not looking forward to the moving itself. Moving out is just so stressful.
It's horrible, isn't it?
Even if you've got limited space, limited possessions like you would have in a Japanese home, it's still just a little bit beyond the pale for me.
Absolutely. I hate moving house. I've done it, two or three times now living here. And I've always tried to throw away everything before I move. Whereas because you've lived there for like 6 years, right, you've probably built up a lot of stuff. Whereas I've always tried to stick everything in like one bag. But now that I've been in this apartment for quite a while, I have built up a lot of stuff and I'm not looking forward to moving one day in the future when that happens. God forbid. It's never a fun process. But
I've just got so many bags of wires. I'm just obsessed with keeping hold of every possible USB wire that's ever existed.
And of course, now you also have the 8mm footage from Sapporo because you finally got it back after all these months, right?
Finally. Yes, COVID delayed it. I had to harangue the good people of On 8mm to get my stuff back. Finally got it back. Turns out, don't really know how to use my camera properly. There's probably some problems with it. There's a lot of light bleed. It was very underwhelming. But what are you going to do? It was a bit of fun, wasn't it?
It was
Seeing
fun.
Chris Broad in glorious Technicolor.
I thought it was great. To give some context, Pete brought an 8mm, was it a Canon camera, Pete? Canon?
Might have been an old school Canon. Certainly Super 8, maybe. I don't know who would have made them back in the day. They were all very mechanical anyway. Maybe a Canon. Just a little Super 8, little handheld doohickey.
It was very retro and had like 3 minutes of footage time. But Pete brought it along to Sapporo. And if you watch the Abroad in Japan video, you can see him wielding it, this giant camera, getting some shots. It's got a really nice kind of noise, isn't it? Because it's actually a film camera. So it's got a nice kind of clicking noise as the film rolls through it.
You're exposing film every time. Your friend, one of the extended Marvel Abroad in Japan universe, Chiaki, she was obsessed.
She was.
With how antiquated and how old it was.
She wouldn't leave you alone. There was scarcely a shot in the video where she's not hovering around following you, trying to see how this giant camera works. Of course, the footage was film, and Pete struggled to find somewhere to develop it. And because of the virus, it took even longer. But finally, Pete's got it back. And I did share it on my Twitter, on Abroad in Japan. And Pete's also got it on his Twitter as well. And it looks really kind of good. It looks a bit like a filter from Instagram, but taken to a whole new level.
Yeah.
It's kind of a very satisfying nostalgic look that I remember from when I was a kid. But it looks really quite good, actually. I'm quite tempted to film something, like buy one and film something on it, because it just looks really beautiful.
I mean, the cameras themselves, I mean, it is just a mechanical kind of battery-powered film recorder that just pulls film through. I don't think a shutter even sort of comes into it. I think it just goes round. The cartridges, you just pop them in. They're really easy to load. It's the processing that costs all the money, because there aren't many developing places left. I mean, perhaps, you know, you hipsters out there might resurrect it by doing a bit more motion filming on old Super 8 film, and it might come back. But in this case, it had to be sent all the way to Germany to get processed. And then once that film is created, it has to be put on a reel-to-reel projector.
Bloody
and
hell.
Then that footage has to be filmed digitally, has to be digitised in another lab as well. So it has to be sent all around the world. It's a miracle it came back for my money. I wouldn't be able to organise that.
It really is, yeah. It's mind-boggling. But it's a real art form that I think has been lost a little bit. Now we use smartphones and whatnot and just digital cameras.
Mm.
I would love to learn a bit more about how it works. We definitely take it for granted these days, the fact we can pull out an iPhone and shoot 4K, 60 FPS, anything we want, and yet 20 years ago, that would have been unthinkable, absolutely unthinkable. But I just love the look of the footage. It makes it look like we're in 1980s Japan. And that is something that I'm very excited about, that concept. So, yeah, really cool.
Yeah.
Next time you're over, bring it again. Do it again, Pete.
Bring some more. Well, look, we'll go halves on the processing.
Definitely. I like the choice of music as well. Some sort of techno soundtrack, which felt
the problem with any Super 8 filming I've ever done before, it's always been like a really twee, you know, Bright Eyes song or something.
Mm.
First Day of My Life or something. I thought, I'm not going to use that. I'm going to use something a bit more vaporwave, a bit more retro, a bit more kind of post-futuristic, as Japan deserves every time. So, yeah, to be honest, getting the footage back, I'm probably not going to be able to get to Japan anytime soon. It gave me a little flavour, a little reminder of what, you know, strolling around parts of the country that you showed me, you and Ryotaro in your little car.
In my little car that I rented.
In your little car.
I think the best footage you got, which is also on Twitter, is the shots of the fishing boat and all these like bemused fishermen gathered around you at like 5 a.m. wondering what the hell this like random guy from the UK is doing with this massive 1980s camera. They all look really confused by it. I didn't even see you filming that day because I was too busy filming the documentary about the tsunami. So I didn't see you wielding it.
You were too busy not vomiting. Old That's sea true. Legs broad over there.
Sea legs broad. Sea legs broad. What a great nickname. But 8mm footage aside, I've had a fun week. Finally released the Driving in Japan video, $1 billion and 2 weeks in the making. It's out. It's finally out, ladies and gentlemen. Go and watch it, please. I put so much time, toil and sweat into this damn video, but I'm quite proud of it. It is one of the best videos I think we've had on the channel for years, and a celebration of finally having my very own tiny car, my own small car, to quote Pete.
Chichai is what he called it. He said very, very small.
That's right.
Really go at it.
When I, at the end of the video, spoilers, I drive up to a beach where Natsuki's sitting waiting with his cigarette in hand, naturally. And I was showing off my car to Natsuki and trying to get him to praise it and make me feel good about myself. And the only thing he said was, oh, this is small. It's rubbish. It's not a Tesla, is it? And that was it. Drove 5 hours just to be insulted by Natsuki. Bastard. Real bastard. But
fantastic.
Yeah.
It was very, very enjoyable indeed.
But in producing this video, it's about a 20-minute video, and I've had an unhealthy addiction recently to energy drinks. You know the energy drinks you get in the front of a convenience store when you go in? You've got the little fridge, all the bottles, right? I discovered a brand called Ryobitan D, and it's in the video, actually. I drank it while I was filming. And just while I've been editing, editing isn't easy. It takes a lot of time and patience and attention, and it just requires you staring at a screen, basically, for hour upon hour. And I started just buying all these drinks, I can't even pronounce it. It's such a complicated drink. Ryobitan D. It sounds like vitamin D, right? But it's not. Ryobitan D. And I've just been shotting them. And it is just like each of these bottles is like two cans of Red Bull. So I've got this like unhealthy drug-like addiction over the last few weeks editing this damn video. I'm trying to wean myself off them now. But so I've been crashing recently with the absence of caffeine.
I mean, it's good that you've seen yourself off your late night coffees and replaced it with something even more damaging. Can I interest you in some cocaine?
That is the next level. It really is.
Yeah, it has to be.
It's a dangerous addiction to have. Very dangerous addiction indeed. But no, the videos. I'm really glad it's done though. I've been doing this for almost 8 years now, and it's actually coming up to the 8 year anniversary of Abroad in Japan, which was kicked off, I think, in the middle of August. I'm going to say August 12th, but it probably was August 15th. So I'm feeling kind of nostalgic. And the third video I ever made was about driving in Japan as well. So it's kind of a tribute to that. So not only just because I got a new car, but also it was a callback to that video. But it was an absolute nightmare to produce, right? You've seen the kind of hell I go through producing these videos firsthand, both in Sapporo and while I was trying not to be sick on a fishing boat, right? I did go through a lot of hell, but that I don't actually show when doing these videos. But one scene, there's a scene in the video where I have like a missile. The car fires a missile randomly and blows some stuff up, particularly a horse. Bit of a weird random scene. But that scene, I had to try and frame it so you could see inside the entire car. And to do that, I was in a forest in the car and I opened the passenger side door and I had to put the camera outside the passenger door, like by the where the chair was, right, to fit the entire interior into the shot. And while I was doing that, because I was in a forest in a very hot day, loads of horrible, terrifying flies and mosquitoes were coming in the car and just smashing into my face and like biting me, eating me away. It was absolute hell. And there's probably loads of outtakes and deleted footage of me just going, fuck, shit, ow, of all these horrible flies just smashing into my face. But that's the kind of horror that I endure while filming these videos, getting eaten by flies.
Well, as long as you were doing it safely. A couple of times I've done some filming where they've done that thing where they have like a car in front with like a big dollied kind of camera that follows you. And I always sort of think, this is just too much for what I'm doing. You know, because people hire those things for like Hollywood films. And I'm just thinking, this is too much. This is too fancy for me. I'm not bringing you anything that warrants this level of investment in a camera that's connected to a big old crane off the back of a truck.
What was that? What was that? I haven't seen anything with you in that required such a setup.
Donaldson, it was a promotional video for the car known as Ka here in the UK. I was talking about football. The driver, I can't drive, was talking about rugby, and I was trying to get him interested in rugby, and he was trying to get me interested in football. All the other way around, rather. And they had this big old swooping, you know, the sort of thing you'd see when they're filming Terminator 2 or something. It was all very exciting, but a little bit too much for my liking, I thought.
Can imagine.
Just put a GoPro in there.
Job done. I mean, that's what I did. I actually just stuck a GoPro. There's a really nice shot, a few nice shots of the car. I just literally just got the GoPro and mounted it to the bonnet of the car and hoped and prayed that the damn thing didn't fall off. And thankfully, it didn't. In my original Driving in Japan video, I had a spare HTC smartphone lying around and I got some like really strong masking tape and just stuck it to the number plate of the car, which in hindsight, probably illegal. Hiding the number plate with a HTC camera.
Look, they can look at the back, the back of the car, can't they?
Yeah, definitely.
No, this is the thing. You just make, you know, why don't you put it on the tread of the wheels? See how many rotations it can take before it breaks.
Why not? Be horrible. I did have a difficult decision though, whether or not to feature a scene in the driving video talking about the time I got pulled over by the police for speeding. Of course, which you were present for. I decided in the end, it was your fault. Yeah, I didn't want to bring up this offence that I caused in the video. To be fair, Japanese speed limits are phenomenally slow. I think
everybody speeds.
Everybody speeds, yeah. Like the road we were driving down in Yamagata the day I got pulled over, where you were in the car, nearly every car in front of us was getting waved over and done for speeding. Yeah. And I think I was buggered for doing 7 kilometres over the speed limit, I'm going to say, which isn't that much, really.
It's either there or it isn't, Chris. Come on.
I mean, I couldn't talk about that in the video. I didn't really want to be like, oh, speed limits are slow, I got done for speeding, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it's illegal. I caused, you know, I got fined for it. That's the way it is. I have to accept that. But I decided probably not something I want to broadcast to hundreds of thousands of people, just on the podcast, where we have more loyal listeners who understand my flaws in a way that you just don't get on YouTube, where people tear you apart in every comment. I also crashed a brand new drone. I got a Mavic 2 Pro, this beautiful cinematic drone, which I used to get these lovely shots, and I crashed it and broke it. And
was this the one that you bought because your last one was broken? You bought it just before you filmed the fisherman.
All right, don't rub it in.
You're constantly just abusing drones.
I do crash a lot of drones. To be fair, yeah, I mean, when we went and did the tsunami documentary, at my Mavic Air, which I'd crashed into a cliff previously, it just didn't take off. We took it on the boat. All the fishermen gathered round when they weren't impressed by your 8mm camera from the 80s. They were impressed by my drone. We went to take it off, and the drone... It kind of veered off to the left and nearly smashed into Ryotaro's face. So we had to cancel the drone flight over the fishing boat. And then luckily I'd bought a Mavic Mini for like $200. And we used that to film the rest of the shots. But I
threw it in the river.
I threw it,
in the sea.
And then I got a brand new drone and it might have gone in the river. That was sad.
Never mind, mate.
The splashing noise.
They'll keep making them. You'll keep buying them.
And I did. Yeah, I had to use a smaller drone. But nevertheless, I did get some really nice drone shots in the documentary, in the driving videos. Go and check them out. The cinematography, some of the best I've been able to pull off in a video. I was inspired by Ghost of Tsushima. The recent video game that we talked about, all the kind of shots of them riding on horses through these beautiful windswept fields. And I was able to get some really nice shots of the rice fields of Yamagata blowing in the wind as the car drove through them. So hopefully you can see that influence there. Yeah. So might have crashed the drone.
There'll be a Digital Foundry Eurogamer breakdown of the frame rate of the video very, very soon. That's all I watch lately is a company called Digital Foundry analysing brand new video games to see how many pixels they're pushing, how hard the graphics cards are working, how the shadows differ between different versions of the game. And I don't get to play these video games because all I do is spend my time just watching videos about the technology behind the video game. I don't know. I'm just ruining my own life. I've just been stupid.
Ruining your own life with pixel peeping. It's a slippery slope, though, with video games, with producing videos, anything. Like, I've been looking at buying a new camera recently. As I mentioned, I was looking at getting a Canon EOS R5, the Sony A7S III, to up my game with the Abroad in Japan videos. But in the same way, you know, with video games or videos on YouTube, the main thing is having a good story, right? I've thought about this long and hard, and I realised that it doesn't matter, you know, even if I get an 8K camera, at the end of the day, if I make content that's not funny or educational or entertaining or useful or interesting, it doesn't matter how good the pixels are, how good the image is. It doesn't matter at all. And I suspect that's the same with a lot of video games.
Slower.
Well, I mean, that's the thing with video games, right? Ghost of Tsushima, it's a beautiful game. And even if there are more pixels, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's more the story that... is the most important thing. And it's actually, that's the reason I've decided not to buy that game, because apparently the story is a little bit repetitive. I think you told me that, actually. Was that you?
I think I might have told you that, yeah.
That was you.
But then there's a backlash on that. I've not played it. I just read about people playing it. And then there'll be a backlash about those people complaining about it. And then, it's all going off.
And the cycle of backlashes continues. As for new cameras, we'll see. But no, I'm really proud of some of the footage we got in the driving video, and I'm really happy. You know, just when you spend 2-3 weeks on a video and it's up. I mean, it only went up yesterday at time of recording, so I'm in this kind of euphoric phase and also a bit of shock. Yeah. When you've worked on a video or a project or any piece of artwork over an extended period of time and you're so focused on it and nothing else gets in the way. When it's finally done and uploaded and people are watching it, it's just like, yes, finally. And you can't really believe it yourself. And that's what I've been doing. Also, it might be the lack of highly caffeinated drinks. Now that I've tried to wean myself off them, that might also have something to do with this dazed-like state I find myself in. There you go. But check it out, ladies and gentlemen.
Check it out.
Check it out. Born Japan. The channel.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God watching me, but I know someone with
everyone else's.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jackmate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is a Staccano production.
And without further ado, we turn our attention to the fax machine. What do we got this week in the fax machine, Mr. Donaldson?
The first fax comes from Franz from the Netherlands. Hey guys, sinister title, I know, but the problem I have really does involve some serious thought. The title was omitted, but I'm sure it's very, very sinister.
The title was, "Should I dump her? ...
Oh dear. I managed to talk my girlfriend into going to Japan for a holiday, except she's grown to love Japan as much as I do, and now she wants to go there on a special occasion. That occasion being our honeymoon. I haven't proposed. I'm not even sure if I want to get married in general. How can I convince her to join me on the way to Japan without having to hurt one of my knees? It's a tricky one. It's a bit of a tricky one, Franz. I don't think you should rush things. I don't think you should be forced into anything. Don't think you should be doing that.
That is pretty sinister. But, I mean, what is the problem? That he just can't go to Japan with his girlfriend for fun? Like, there's an expectation that if he's like, let's go to Japan, she'll be like,
it has to be honeymoon.
Marriage. So,
I mean, that's a holiday with an extra 10 grand price tag, isn't it? If not more. I don't know how much weddings cost. I presume it's about 10 grand.
Yeah, I have no idea either.
Very expensive.
I remember
very expensive.
When I used to work at Castle for weddings, the package I think was £23,000 for a wedding.
Jesus H flips.
What could you do with 23 grand? There's so many better things you could do with it. People argue that it's the best day of your life.
23 drones.
Yeah, all which would be crashed very, very quickly, knowing me. But people say it's the best day of your life, having friends and family around. I think the best day of my life would be sitting on a beach, just having a drink with Natsuki.
With all of your jelly.
With all of my
jelly.
With all of my jelly. I don't really think that's a question we can answer, Franz. That's something you've got to decide for yourself. What was even the question? How can
inside your heart.
It's in your heart. How can I convince her to join me to come to Japan without having to hurt one of my knees? Just be up front. Just say, let's go to Japan. And it not be our honeymoon. And then maybe one day we'll get married and dangle the carrot of the carrot of marriage before her. I don't know.
What if it's shit? What if you have a shit holiday then, then you've ruined Japan, haven't you? Can't go again. You can always go again for your honeymoon and do it properly.
But there you go. Let us know, Franz. Let us know what you decide. And what happens, at least with the whole virus situation, you won't be coming over for a while anyway. Gives you some time to make the big decision. But thanks for dropping us this philosophical debate. We've got one from Luciano. It says, hey, Chris and Pete. Luciano from Argentina here. I was watching Chris's video, What Driving in Japan is Really Like. And at one point, he turns on the radio. What comes next can only be described as the sound of hell, especially for everyone in Argentina, where that song was used in an advert for a sushi delivery all throughout the quarantine. I'd like to apologise for the blight we've caused in the world and in Chris's ears. The song he's referencing is a song that is just called Arigato Gozaimasu, and it's just like three or four people shouting, Arigato, Arigato Gozaimasu, Arigato, Arigato, and it just gets stuck in your head. Did you hear it in the video? It's horrific.
Yeah, I presume it's like library music, because obviously you can't play proper music on your, in any of your endeavours.
Yes, it was admittedly staged, but kind of not. I mean, I was looking for... I'm always on the hunt for good royalty-free music, right? And you just... I remember going on a website, I think it was premiumbeat.com, and typing in Japanese music or something. And that came up, and I was like, oh, that must be good. It's called Arigato Gozaimasu. Must have some sort of nice Japanese kind of vibe to it. And it's just people shouting Arigato Gozaimasu, and there's no... It's just awful.
So the sushi company must have just, you know, done the exact same thing, just typed in Japanese music and went, yeah, that'll do.
Exactly. That is the level. Yeah. That is the laziness of the Argentinian sushi company. And I feel sorry for the people of Argentina who had to endure the song for an extended period of time. But Luciano continues, in another note, while studying Japanese a few years ago, my teacher told us about the time she lived in Japan when she was little. One of the things that she seemed to remember was how much fuss is caused by apparently small things that go out of the norm, such as taking a shower in the morning instead of at night. Here goes my question for you. Have you ever been confronted about breaching an untold social rule? Thank you for everything and keep up the excellent work, Luciano. It's an interesting one. I mean, there's lots of norms like that. One of the ones that annoys me the most is when you go for a drink with friends in Japan, either with friends or in a work context, the first drink traditionally is always namabiru, right? Beer out of tap. Have you encountered that, Pete?
Right.
One of your many outings?
No, I haven't. No.
It's the thing you order, just because it's simple, right? The idea is everyone can get it quickly. The waiters and the staff can pour like loads of beer on tap really quickly. But I don't really like namabiru. I don't really like beer out of tap. I either like a bottle of Sapporo or just a Moscow Mule. I drink exclusively Moscow Mule, vodka and ginger ale. And so whenever I go out with someone who's Japanese, they're like shocked by this concept. They're like, oh, Chris, namabiru? And I'm like, no, not namabiru. I want a Moscow Mule. And they're like, what? And Natsuki always makes fun of me for it. But it's kind of, they make fun of me, they in jest, but there is, you know, they're actually being serious. There's a undertone of seriousness to it. They're like, why is he rocking the boat? Why is he being annoying? Just order the fucking namabiru and then you can have the Moscow Mule afterwards. But that's not how I roll. I want my Moscow Mule now.
No.
So
I agree. I guess that's, I mean, but then I like beer. I do think it is a bit annoying when everybody else is getting something and it's like, let's just get this done quickly. And you want a Moscow Mule made up, honestly. I was in Lille over the weekend and I did see a set of beers that were from the company Tuborg, who we have gladly let back into our lives after the 90s, which was kind of its heyday. They're playing fast and loose. They've seen the success of Desperado, which is a lager mixed with the flavour of tequila. It's unlovable. I don't know why kids drink it. It's gross. This is beer flavoured with the flavour of vodka. Who wants that?
Oh, God.
Does vodka even have a flavour? So, Tuborg, they think they can get away with that. I don't think they can, personally. I just don't think they can.
Tuborg. It's pretty good. With Moscow Mule, weirdly, when Moscow Mule is just vodka with ginger ale and some lime, right? I came back to the UK for a holiday and I remember going to a pub and the guy was like, what are you having? I said, Moscow Mule. And he went, what's that? And I was like, it's vodka with ginger ale. I said, why don't you just say that then? Why don't you just say vodka with ginger ale? And I was like, fuck you. It sounds much cooler if you say Moscow Mule. I'm guessing it's an American branded cocktail, or maybe it's just a shit person at a pub. I don't know. But like, that annoyed me. And so I've been reluctant.
I guess like, It's like
order it.
Ginger ale would be the sort of thing you'd drink if you were like, you know, in the middle of like America and you wanted something spicy in an arid desert with your mule. Dry, because it's dry. Mules are always dry and always walking on dusty paths. And Moscow vodka. I think that's why that was named. That's what I've decided.
Yeah, that's what you've decided. The history of an entire cocktail defined by Pete Donaldson at 11:30 in the morning. Done. Brilliantly done.
Completed it.
Can you think of any other untold social rules that might have been breached on your travels in Japan? Anything you've done wrong so far?
Well, I'm trying to think, really. Yeah, I think it's just mostly the hand. There's just the whole hand towel situation. Don't put it on your face. I know people do it, but you shouldn't do it. Like the thing is, when you come out of something somewhere really hot or even really cold, you kind of want that. You want to put that towel on your face, but that's not the done thing.
I mean, yeah. So every good meal in Japan, you get oshibori, the little warm towel. In the summer, it's often chilled, and in the winter, it's often heated. I must admit, I do use it to wipe my face as well. And I'd say quite a lot of people do, like 30% of businessmen that I see do it. So it's not too bad. But if you're in a fancy restaurant, I'd avoid doing it. Just do it like a izakaya or a pub or something. That's a good one. Good point. People often ask about that. All right. Mm. Thank you. Good question, Luciano. What we got next, Pete?
We have got a message from Emily from Idaho. Hi, Chris and Pete. I am an avid podcast listener, and yours is by far my favourite. Thank you very much, Emily from Idaho. Your increase to 2 episodes per week has truly been one of the few highlights of this otherwise dismal year. I always look forward to hearing what bizarre answers Pete will give to Chris's questions. And I can never quite tell how much of that is played up for our entertainment and how much is a fascinating glimpse into a strange, fathomless mind. I recently attended a birthday party for a Japanese friend's young daughter. At most children's birthday parties I've been to, one of the activities is watching the birthday girl or boy open gifts near the end of the party. At this event, however, the gifts were all loaded unopened into my friend's car to be opened later. I was told later that it could be considered a little bit tacky in Japanese culture to open a gift in front of the giver. I was wondering if you had been to any Japanese birthday parties, and if so, was there anything that surprised you in the differences from the traditions growing up? Wow. Pete, I also want to mention to you, reminded of them by your recent mention of your chuck tattoo. I'm currently replaying the full Monkey Island series, and I'm deeply, deeply enjoying them all over again. So thanks for sending me down that rabbit hole and decreasing my productivity for the foreseeable future. Thanks for reading, Emily from Idaho. An enjoyable email, and lovely to hear a bit of Monkey Island action going on.
Good.
Fantastic.
Old Monkey Island. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, I can imagine the disappointment watching all these presents. Like, the best bit of a birthday party I remember, because I haven't been to a birthday party in years, was the whole cracking open the presents, right, and seeing what the birthday boy or girl had got. So the idea, everyone's gathered around waiting for the presents to be opened, and then they're like, right, party's over, put the presents in the car, and then fuck off with all the presents. That could be a little bit underwhelming, a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, but it's a bit competitive, though, isn't it? Sort of going, oh, what's that person got? Is it better than what we got them for them? I find that a little bit, and especially because frequently when I go to parties, I'd forget to bring anything, and then I'm like in the off license at 10 p.m. because I'm super late buying a bottle of Cristal. Rosé.
And shocking.
Yeah. Never mind. Not a great planner.
If you were going to a birthday party, right, and you knew the presents were going to be opened, would you get a better present, do you think? Just because it would make you look better? Would that change your mind in the decision making process?
Probably.
I think that's not a bad point.
Yeah, I think you'd be more likely to. So that's probably why we do it over here, so that we can increase people's performance when it comes to stuff like that. And also re-gifting as well. That's a bit of a culture. Oh, I've just got a new toaster. You've given me a toaster for my birthday. Didn't you get married recently? Did you get given that toaster? Good, right.
It happens all too often. I mean, we did cover this briefly in the quiz, I think last week or the week before, when we're doing a quiz and we did one on cultural etiquette, didn't we? And I said, is it rude to A, open a present in front of the person who's given it to you? Or is it rude to not return a gift? Or when someone buys you a present, is it rude to not buy them a present in return? And the answer was, it's a little bit rude to open the present in front of the person that's given it to you in Japan. I think that's because it could be a little bit awkward. I think it's because it can make the person feel uncomfortable, right? If you buy me, I think in Japanese culture, if you buy me a present, right, there's and I have to open it in front of you, there's a real sense of pressure that I have to be like, oh, wow, Pete, it's the hairbrush I really wanted.
It's the head of my enemy.
The head of your enemy with your samurai sword. There's that pressure, isn't there? And that is a thing that they just wouldn't want in Japan, like putting that pressure on someone to have to act in a way or show some false sense of gratitude. So that's why that culture exists. But often, you know, I've had people buy me presents, Japanese friends, and they've kind of said to me, oh, please open it. They've insisted on me opening it there and then. So there is that kind of way around it. If the person says, oh, yeah, no, please open it, then it's okay, I think. There's a phrase in Japanese when you give a present to someone. And if you watch the Hyde documentary with Hyde the rock star, when I gave him a bottle of, I got him some gin, I said to him, tsumaranaimono desu ka, which means it's a boring thing, nevertheless. And you sort of say that whenever you hand a present to someone in Japan, tsumaranaimono desu ka. Like, boring thing. It's a boring thing, but here you go. So you always say that. So go and check out the Hyde documentary if you want to see that phrase in action. I bought him some gin, which turned out later on was a bit cheap. Someone in the comments was like, that gin was really cheap. It didn't matter. Brilliant. Real present.
Here's your one cup.
Exactly. One cup sake. Have that, Hyde. I also got him a swear words book, which is very good. That made up for
nice. That'd be good. Yeah, that's always a lot of fun.
Definitely. Got a question from Nick from London. He says, hi, Chris, and low-scoring Pete. Ah, oh, low-scoring Pete. You didn't do very well in the quiz, did you, Pete? Poor old Pete.
No, I didn't.
Well, hopefully we'll find the pathway to redemption in an upcoming episode. Nick says, just wondering how many Japanese employers and employees have adjusted to working from home. Knowing the cultural emphasis on being present at work, I imagine this is a difficult thing for Japan to embrace. But have they embraced the benefits, or are they just keen to get back to how things were? Cheers and keep up the good work. Nick from London. That's a good question, actually. In Japan, the emphasis is often on being present at work for extended periods of time. Obviously, in all cultures, it's good to turn up to work. But in Japan, you are kind of, there's an unspoken rule that you have to stay in the office past work hours. So say that your kind of work hours finish at 5 p.m. Often, you will be there till 7 or 8 p.m. just because it looks good, right? And that's the way you get promoted. When the boss makes that fateful decision on who to promote, they'll look at people that have been in the office a lot longer. And that's how you kind of win favor and get promoted in Japan. Nevertheless, I have seen a real shift in that in Japan for the better in the last few months. And a lot of companies have embraced the working from home culture just because it saves a lot of companies from having issues, right? There's a real stigma at the moment. If you have a company and one of your members of staff gets the coronavirus, then they have to shut down the entire company. Like, there was a really big company in Tokyo. I can't remember if it was Dentsu, the big marketing company, had like a case in their skyscraper, and everyone had to go home and cause a lot of kind of real big issues. So they have seemed to embrace it recently, and cities like Sendai and Tokyo do feel noticeably quieter because there's less commuters. And even Ryotaro, who has a company working in travel consultancy and tourism consultancy, he has had all his staff work from home. And he said to me recently that he's embracing the idea of just getting all his staff and himself to just work from home, work remotely. So it could be the start of some positive change in Japan, because undeniably that is one of the worst things, right? That kind of overwork kind of culture. So I think it could be quite good. I think it's one of the few benefits to come out of it.
It's some of the worst managers I've ever worked under are obsessed with the control that they have over you when you are. But they want you there. They want the stuff that you do to be in front of them. And it's completely meaningless. It doesn't make the work any better or any quicker or any more, you know, conscientious. It's just that control thing of, I employ you, so you've got to be here. Instead of actually just being a bit more flexible and a bit just more like a human being. So I think there will be a massive culture change. And I will sort of say that If I was a betting man and a slight and don't have the best opinion of unchecked capitalism, I imagine what they'll do is just close down their expensive central city offices and insist that people work from home. They'll use that to reduce the amount of money they pay for transport and things like that. In the city waitings you sometimes get, but there'll be no increase in the amount of money paid to the person, even though they're dedicating some of their house to their working environment. You know, if I have to convert the corner of my house into a radio studio or an office, I think there should be some recompense for that, because at the end of the day, you're reducing the amount of space you have in your house to be at home.
Yeah.
And also they're saving on rental, properties in the centre of town and things like that. So it maybe won't be as far reaching as we perhaps expect. And to be honest, a lot of people, usually men, because we're daft, seem to see being in the office as a way of avoiding being at home, which
Very
is
true.
Not the way to live your life.
Absolutely. I think it'd be really interesting to see how it pans out, to be honest. Another good friend of mine, Yuki, the Japanese businessman, my jovial friend with his tiny beers, he is against the idea of working from home on a mass scale because he thinks his staff will like lose motivation or will lose that kind of sense of team. So he's a little bit on the other opposite end of the scale to Ryotaro. But then his business is very different. So it's on a case-by-case kind of situation, but like, I don't know.
I've been to his office.
You
it's
have.
Very kind of West Coast. It's very West Coast America / East Coast Russia. Very beanbag chairs, hoverboards, and all kinds of nonsense. It's all very open plan. Lovely
co-working space. Yeah, it's a really cool place. I hope to put it in a video one day because it's a really amazing place. But I'll keep an eye on that though. We'll bring that up again and discuss that later on down the line, Nick, when we see how things pan out. But it's a really good question. Thanks for asking. Keep the stories, questions, comments coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back in the next few days to do it all over again, guys. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days and we'll be back to do it all over again very soon on Sunday. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.